Hello, loyal listeners and new listeners and listeners of all ages, creeds, and I wasn't entirely sure where I was going with that. Anyways, this episode is with the two of the boys of the fabulous team behind Watson and Holmes, which is a race-bent comic set in Harlem. It's kind of amazing, and I'm really happy that we got to talk to them. We've been thinking about chatting with them for ages and ages, and then life happened. You know how it is. Watson and Holmes is a modern urban take on the tales of Sherlock Holmes by Sir Arthur Conan Doyle, re-envisioning Sherlock Holmes and Dr. John Watson as African Americans and taking place in New York City's famous Harlem district. The stories can go in fresh and new directions never traveled before. This is also a series in which Holmes is no longer the central character, as he shares equal spotlight with Watson, as emphasized in the title. In this take on the classic, John Watson is a former para-jumper from the U.S. Air Force returning from Afghanistan. He is currently working in an inner-city clinic, helping the less fortunate while trying to pay his debts after a hard divorce. Holmes is a private investigator. He used to work as a programmer in an internet startup that went belly up. Consequently, his career was ruined as a result of it. Then he decided to become a PI. Both cross paths for the first time when an unusual case Holmes is involved in ends up being in Watson's emergency room. During the investigation, a conspiracy is discovered that links unexpected people together while Watson and Holmes bump heads along the way in more ways than one. You can find all you need to know about Watson and Holmes at www.newparadigmstudios.com. So yeah, this is a fantastic interview with two of the creatives behind the team. Also, as always, we need to take a moment to thank our sponsors, who have not only helped us bring you more and more episodes, but have allowed us to host giveaways and events, and they really, really help. They are amazing also, and you need to check them out if you haven't already. I know we talk about them every single episode, but it's very much so worth it, because one of them is the freaking Baker Street Journal, and it's like the publication. It's what Sherlock Holmes fans read, really. You can find them at bakerstreetjournal.com. It's a quarterly publication. Anyone can submit things, so if you wanted to write an article of some sort, first you need to send it to us for our book. You can find that info at theonefixpoint.tumblr.com. Just throwing that in there. No, check out the Baker Street Journal. There's all sorts. Ghost Bees now has his art going in every single time, which is fantastic. I'm in the winter issue. The babes are trying to be in every issue from here on out, slowly taking over the world. Aha. Also, Wessex Press, which is publishing the One Fixed Point essay collection. You can find them at wessexpress.com. They also publish the journal, and they have all sorts of Sherlock Holmes books. They have the Vincent Starr CD, which is beautiful and everyone should own. They also have a study in celluloid, which is behind the scenes on the Granada Productions, written by the producer Michael Cox, which was out of print for a really long time, and now it's back. So you should get it because it's back. And also Scintillation of Science, not Scintillation, as I pronounced it before because I don't know how to pronounce things apparently. That is a symposium in the summer. First one I ever talked at, which was, it was terrifying, but it was really good. Really good fun. You can find that at scintillation.org, I think. I should know this. I'm sorry. Type in Scintillation of Science and it'll come up. I promise. You can also find them on Twitter and Facebook and all the great places. I also want to give a big shout out to the girls of 221BCon. 221BCon is a Sherlock Holmes convention in April in Atlanta, Georgia. See, aren't you happy something's happening in America? Not in London. So you should sign up for this. Not only because it's going to be amazing, they have tons of guests and panels and everything set up. We will be doing a live podcast, which will be really fun. We sort of did one at Sherlockpalooza, but this will be more podcasty format. It'll be quite fun. I'm also going to be on a bunch of panels, and if you want to listen to me babble, I don't know, God, no. But it's going to be absolutely fantastic. You can find all the info at 221bcon.com. Yeah, dude, it's a Sherlock Holmes convention. Just Sherlock Holmes. Yeah. And yeah. I'm trying to think if there's anything else new. No, that's it. That's it. And enjoy the episode.
Oh, they call us the irregulars, but baby, we're all send you home. You feel like you're losing your mind. If this quotidian world has got you crying, won't you two one mine?
How did we get this party started?
Right-o. Well, yes, let's absolutely dive in. I have in front of me, for instance, just to use a visual aid on a podcast, because that's totally
very useful.
We're talking with Watson and Holmes today, the guys behind the fabulous comic series, Watson and Holmes, and we ran into each other last at New York Comic Con, which is where I picked up this special noir edition of this issue. So do you guys mind just maybe introducing yourselves, and then we have a few questions for you, and then we'll just chat about the comic and about the project.
Absolutely.
Awesome.
Sounds good.
So you're Brandon Perlow.
Yes.
And what is your position in the Watson and Holmes team?
I am publisher and co-creator and just all-around person to, like, you know, help out when wherever things are needed.
Excellent. General badass.
Yeah, I guess.
Own it.
Yeah, own
it. Take that title and run away with it.
Right. And Paul, what are you generally working on?
Assisting with the story, co-creator of, as far as... co-creator of this project as well, and right now I'm doing a lot of coloring work on it.
Awesome. Yeah,
some writing fixes and things of that sort.
Very, very cool. And I know that the second issue just came out.
Yep. Did it? Okay, good. It did.
It came out Thanksgiving. Has anyone read it?
I have not yet, but I have looked. I have thumbed through it, and it looks fabulous. It looks really, really cool. I have not read it yet. But the first one leaves you in very much of a cliffhanger. So it's extremely important, I think, that, I'm gonna get to that sooner rather than later, because the end of the first one, crazy stuff's going down.
Nice.
Whenever we interview people, you become an honorary Baker Street babe. You can wear this with pride. It comes with a complimentary imaginary bikini.
And it'll go with the rest of them.
It's a houndstooth pattern.
Awesome. Wait a second. Has anybody ever made a houndstooth bikini?
I'm sure someone has.
Someone has to. Oh.
I've got the internet. I should type this.
Google that shit.
Report that.
So yeah. So there's. What is it, 4 questions? I don't know. It changes every single time. But basically, we would just want to kind of, how did you get into Sherlock Holmes? Like, did you read them as a kid? Is it a sort of a new fascination? Were you always aware of it? Do you actually not know who he is and you've been lying this entire time?
I read quite a bit of his work when I was younger, junior high school and high school. I think I recently got back into it from the Robert Downey Jr. Sherlock Holmes movies.
Uh-huh.
I would say definitely recently because of after doing the book, I was watching Sherlock, you know, on Netflix and really enjoyed it. But really, it's mainly from, you know, I guess reading the books when I was younger. So that familiarity I do have.
For me, we had a collection of short stories in our house, along with a whole bunch of other books. Sitting in the living room, there was a copy of a Sherlock Holmes short stories collection, and I think one of the first things I ever read for some reason was, like, the Greek letters.
Mm-hmm.
And I just kept reading the short stories from there, and it was that, and I believe there was the Lovecraft one as well that I used to read, but it was the short stories that got me into it, and I would say that would be, like, late elementary school. I just loved I just really love the atmosphere and the love the stories. And I think I really like the concept of the Diogenes Club. And, you know, there's just something about that time period I've always really liked. I mean, then again, I used to watch a hell of a lot of PBS when I was younger. So I got used to, like, a lot of British dramas and saw the some of the older Sherlock Holmes stuff on the replayed on that station. So
the Jeremy Brett one?
I believe so. Yeah.
Nice. So, what were your favorite stories then from the canon?
I would say Hound from the Hounds of the Baskervilles.
Yeah.
Nice. Good Lord. For me, it would have to be, I don't know, why I liked the Greek letters and the awkwardness of Holmes trying to explain away his brother before he even shows up. And, God, what else? He's like, yeah, what's your favorite movie, Paul? No, what's my favorite book? You know, honestly, I haven't read Baskervilles in so long. I barely remember that one.
That one's the one I think people run into sort of like in ninth grade English classes.
Yeah.
If they happen to be a typical ninth grade high school student and skimming a lot of their English assignments, then it's... I definitely know a lot of people who have technically read Hound of the Baskervilles, but don't remember.
I don't remember ever having the luck to actually have that be a required reading. For some reason, I just always remember the nightmare that was Ethan Frome being pushed on us.
I love Ethan Frome.
That is the most depressing story. Oh my god.
It really is. I really liked it for some reason. I don't know. It is horrible. Now that I'm thinking about it, it is like horrible.
It's so beautifully written, though.
It is. Was great. I think that was it. That was very beautifully written, even though the plot is depressing as hell.
It's like, yes, how to depress the entire English class at once. Make them read that. Exactly. No, now that I think about it, one that I have read over and over again is, for some reason, I just like the pacing of, Study in Scarlet. So that was one of my favorites. I guess you can say that would be one of my favorites.
It's nice to read about them beginning together, you know, because you know it's going to, after the fact, as a modern reader, you know it's going to go on for a really long time. So there's something classic about, you know, reading the origin story.
And it's that, and also I think it's because it's been a book that I haven't lost yet. I mean, I tend to go through books like crazy. It's like, I have to rebuy that. Where did that go?
So, for sure.
So who are your favorite characters then?
Let's see. Well, I'm really impartial to Watson. I do really like Watson a great deal.
Yay, Watson! Yeah.
Absolutely. I think, you know, Sherlock's, but it's hard to relate to him because he's a super genius. I mean, it's like, Watson's a very smart guy who's, you know, very studied, and I think, you know, he's someone that I think easier to relate to. So it's like when you see someone who's like, you know, on a different level, it's like unless you're a genius like Sherlock is, it's hard to relate to.
Mm-hmm. True. Favorite adaptation. And you're completely allowed to say your own. It can be film, prestige, comic, puppet theater, whatever.
Well, I would say The Great Mouse Detective. There also is, and I cannot lie, Baker Street by Guy Davis.
Yes.
It's an older comic adaptation of Sherlock Holmes. You guys do know this one, correct?
No.
Oh, no.
Oh, are you serious?
Sorry.
Oh, by the way, I did easily find Houndstooth Pattern Bikinis, so.
Oh my god.
I'm surprised to hear that.
It popped up really quickly in the very first shopping search.
We're not shocked.
No.
We are amused.
Sorry, I'm just looking this up. I was trying to remember the writer's name, but it's pretty much Gary Reed and Guy Davis did a comic in the late 1980s through the 90s called Baker Street, Honor Among Punks. And it is an alternate universe retelling of Sherlock Holmes in 1980s punk Britain.
Wait, isn't
they're
both girls?
Yeah.
They're both girls.
Okay,
yes.
I do know this.
Yeah, we do.
Okay.
Yeah, that was one of my favorite comics ever, ever, ever. It was one of my favorite, like, alternative, not just Sherlock Holmes, but as far as the art, the storytelling, everything I thought was terrific. And if you guys look, I can't recommend it enough.
You can find it on Amazon if you really try.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, rock on. We've been Tumblring that, haven't we, Chris?
Yeah, like, I thought it was fairly recent, but how old is it?
No, it's old.
Yeah, 1989.
Jeez, man.
I was just getting into the comics world when I found that, and I was just like, this is the best thing ever. There's no superheroes.
I won't tell you how old I was.
Right? Too young. The art on it is astonishing. Like, the whole style of it is just beautiful and really, really unique. I can't even have read them. I just have seen the art from a few posts that exist.
Well, and that was his first work, too. I mean, it's like he's known for his Sandman Mystery Theater and some other books.
Mm-hmm. And Mountain's Bureau of, whatever you call it, the Hellboy spinoffs. He's been working with... Guy Davis is an outstanding artist, and this, I really, really cannot recommend this collected comic enough. It's one of the best Sherlock Holmes adaptations I've seen.
So it's called Baker Street, then? That's
yes.
That's what we told him.
Baker Street? Right. Honor Among Thieves.
Sailed.
No, Honor Among Punks.
Honor Among Punks. Yeah, I'm sorry. Yeah.
Okay. Honor Among Punks. Look for it. Look for it in your neighborhood comic book shop first, people.
I would say for me, there's not one definitive interpretation. I would say, I mean, heck, as a kid, I loved Young Sherlock Holmes. I still have good, feelings about that one.
Yay!
You know, of course, you know, the Downey Jr. movies are great, like, high-octane adventure takes, you know, very over the top, but they're fun to watch.
They're very fun.
And again, I would say Sherlock is probably the best, you know, modern, you know, retake on the characters. I haven't seen, I'll be honest, I don't remember the Jeremy Brett stuff, and I'm probably going to have to watch them because, you know, they are known as, like,
you should.
Very strong canonical versions of the characters, so...
You should definitely watch those. Yeah. If only because I think that with the Granada series, you have this very unique series where, despite any sort of, you can have quibble about any individual thing in that show, like, oh, it's interesting that Jeremy Brett was 50 when he was, in fact, you know, hired to start doing the adventures, and it's a little bit skewed age-wise, and, you know, there are various aspects of I mean, Brett's characterization is endlessly fascinating, and there's all kinds of opinions on that subject, but what you do have with the Granada series is you have the closest to Sir Arthur Conan Doyle's short stories just on the screen in an hour with the Paget illustrations imitated directly. So you've got all of the art sort of being echoed in the way this show was blocked. And two of the best Watsons ever...
David Burke.
Oh, he's so good. And, you know, I don't know if you girls agree with me, but I've never seen anything that more resembled the actual short stories than the Granada series.
Definitely.
They're, like, recommend. Word for word and at some points, but they're very, yeah, they, it's like they took what was on the page and they completely brought it to life, and they also filled in the gaps.
Yeah.
Nice.
I think that you can watch them on Netflix.
I think so.
Cool.
Shout out.
Google. We will send you the bill, Netflix, for...
Right?
One last question.
Chris, do it.
If you could have tea with anyone from the canon or from a new adaptation, whatever, a tea with any Sherlock Holmes character, who would you want to have tea with?
Well, that's an interesting question. I think Lucy Liu's very attractive, so I wouldn't mind having... But if I was going to hang out, I would definitely say the actor on Sherlock plays Watson.
Martin Freeman.
Oh.
Who?
John.
Yeah, John. What's his name?
Martin Freeman.
Martin Freeman. I would definitely like to have a drink of tea with him, just, you know, shoot the breeze.
Right.
Yay.
Woo-hoo.
Okay.
If they would suffer my company, I would have to say it would probably be Basil Rathbone, just to say that I could have tea with Basil Rathbone.
He'd be really swank to have tea with, I feel.
Hell yeah, it would.
Get the jazz playing in the background.
nice parlor music.
Basil Rathbone, with which of the haircuts, though? The one with the super, like, forward one?
And with the jacket. Good lord. You know? It's amazing how you don't think about people's hair. I mean, it's like...
I think about people's hair all the time.
Oh, lord. Yeah.
I just shave
it. Speaking of films, what do you guys think about, what was the one, name of the one with Michael Caine in it? Where he plays
Without
an idiot.
A Clue? Fuck.
Yes.
Oh, so cute. So good.
That was a pretty funny movie, actually.
His real name is Artie Morty!
Like, no, dude. Fail. Fail. That movie's hilarious.
God.
You know, I think that one of the things that movie proves is that you can do absolutely anything to the Sherlock Holmes canon, and it still works. Like, if you pay enough attention enough of the time, you can turn it upside down and have Sherlock Holmes be a hired actor who's, you know, like, semi-sentient and just sort of wanders around pretending to be the crime solver, and then have Ben Kingsley as the background, you know, like, the puppeteer who pulls the string. Mm. I mean, you can do anything you want with these characters, and as long as you're paying attention, it still works.
I mean, give it a week or two, you're gonna have one set in like ancient Greece or Rome. You know, it could work.
There is no reason not to work. Togas.
Oh gosh.
So yes, set in frontier London.
There's no reason for that not to work.
No, there isn't.
I'm just surprised setting. No one's released one that...
It was the Picts.
I'm just surprised no one's released one that takes place in the Castro. I mean, it would take care of everyone's, you know, love for shipping Watson and Holmes.
They put it in the Castro?
Yeah, someone should do it. I think it would sell incredibly well.
I mean, you could even do this in Tokugawa, Japan. I mean, you know, just a samurai version of Sherlock Holmes would work.
Oh, my God. That's like hitting all my checkboxes right now.
Yeah. Do it.
Love it.
The Castro one, when I imagine if you did a Castro one, it looks in my head like Baker Street, the punk one. Like that design. I don't remember where they were though.
They're in London.
They're in London, okay.
They're in London too.
They're in London. All the Sherlock Holmes adaptations. That's what we want.
Yes.
All of
them. I was like, is that going somewhere? No? Okay.
Nope. Just all of them. We want more. Doesn't matter where they are or what time period. Although I do think it's really a funny idea. Like if you did an ancient London, you could have a toga party.
You could have a toga party.
You could. Is it instead of was it Eileen Adler? You could have was it Boudica?
Yes. Oh yes. Perfect. Oh my God, queen of the tribes.
Yeah, pretty much.
Excellent. What is the major thrust of the concept behind Watson and Holmes, if you were to describe it?
Oh, Paul, I think you're better at that than I am.
Oh, good Lord. really, it is a retelling of a story in modern-day urban New York. The principal characters are, in this telling of the tale, African-American. And the atmosphere of Harlem, the inner city, and situations that they're coming across, really the whole Sherlock Holmes mythos really transplants itself well to modern urban, like street level crime and just the life. It just seems like it really fits well. It honestly didn't need as much of a change. It's just a replanting of the same situation, different atmosphere. I mean, there are differences to the characters, but no matter what you change, there's some things about them that are always going to remain the same. It was just really remarkable how easy we were able to find parallels to things and just have it kind of seem like it fit.
It's such an interesting high concept piece in the sense that you've got the race bent element of it, you've got the update to modern day, but really nothing like the update to modern day that you have with BBC Sherlock or with CBS Elementary, both of which are still set in, I don't know, yours is a much more neighborhood specific setting, I feel like.
Just like,
And I live there.
Nice.
Which is a killer. I don't know, the whole tone of it is definitely, since it's so neighborhood specific to Harlem and to Washington Heights, the urban setting is very, very different than even elementary set in New York, but it looks nothing like this. And I don't know, I think it's killer. It's really great.
just so you know, I think we're going to, beyond, you know, this volume, we'll go into other areas of New York and tri-state area. Just this initial story mm-hmm. take place in those neighborhoods.
Yeah, absolutely. It's got a very, I don't know, the atmosphere to it is unique, I think, among Holmes projects.
I think I know what you're trying to say, Lindsay. Like, because especially with BBC Sherlock, it's, you know, Baker Street, it's a poshish area in London.
Yeah.
And so you still sort of have that more of like that sort of highbrow sort of thing. And I think Elementary has that as well, because Johnny Lee Miller's Holmes' dad is like super rich and gave him this brownstone and stuff. So it's not quite, I think the comic has more of like a grittier tone that you sort of more associate with like actual New York in a way.
Yeah. And
that's totally fair. Yeah.
You know, we've still got the, living above the, instead of a bookstore, it's an R&B used vinyl store. I mean, it's still so much of the same elements I feel are still there and should stay there. I don't know. I don't like going too far away from the concepts. I mean, I do like Holmes still being a detective. I don't like, you know, transplanting him into this position of being like a forensic specialist or taking it too far away from where it comes from. I don't know if that makes any sense or not.
No, totally.
Definitely. I mean, there's a difference between an adaptation that is still recognizably Sherlock Holmes and Dr. Watson and an adaptation that's inspired by them with the Mentalist or Monk or, you know, like House to a certain extent, although that's pretty close to Sherlock Holmes. But you've definitely got all the little touches are in there, you know. And Holmes himself, the character of Holmes, at least in the first issue, he's very dry, and he has the little phrases where you immediately know where you are, where he says, oh, now we need to take an irregular approach, for instance. and it's great, because they operate, you know, they always have operated outside the law to a certain extent.
Mm-hmm.
That must really work for an urban New York setting, though. Like, the fact that they're not cops, and they're not criminals. There's something in between that's sort of their own moral compass. Does that make sense?
Yeah. Very much.
Absolutely. I think they're definitely, you know, not criminals, but I definitely think, you know, I would say closer to vigilante in some sense than criminal.
Interesting thing, though, that we were talking about with our editor recently is that in this story, unlike the one, you know, unlike the original stories, there's a lot different, and there's a big, much different environment as far as what they can get away with on their own and how they are ultimately in this story somewhat answerable to Lestrade, because Holmes is very aware in our version that he needs Lestrade on his side. He can't treat her than anything less than the respect that he feels for her. That's one of the differences that we have in this story, is that the character of Lestrade is actually somewhat from a similar background or origin as Holmes. They actually studied criminology together, which is where we have them actually meeting for the first time. And Holmes realizes that it's not the kind of world where people are going to understand him being involved in criminal incidents without reporting to the police or whatnot. Mm-hmm. And it's gonna come out more and more in the story that he really needs to play along with her world as well as, you know, continue to live in his own.
Yay for gender bending!
Yay!
Yay for race bending and gender bending and all of it together.
All the bending.
Big old pot. All the bending. Baked in the oven and sliced.
We're not done with bending yet. Again, it's once we reveal, you know, the big baddies, you'll be blown away. I mean, I think we definitely reveal, you know, another major character in issue two. Has anyone read issue two? Has Christina or Amy read issue two?
No.
Not yet. I want to.
Sorry.
I gotta say, Mycroft looks amazing. Mycroft just looks amazing.
Yeah, we sent you the first few, you know, some, you know, page preview of it.
Yeah. He's slamming. I mean, do you guys mind, like, you don't have to do a whole description of what your arc is for this first series of comics, but it would be kind of cool. I know that there's, we've been talking this up like gangbusters, but there are certainly people who haven't seen it yet. And so, do you want to just give like a really quick biographical sketch of the way Holmes, Watson, and just Lestrade and the major players, you've updated them in this incarnation so that people know how awesome it is?
Sure. One of the big things we did was we kept the whole Afghanistan military origin with Watson, but we decided, like, you know, being a medic is just not enough, especially if Watson is really more of a partner to Holmes than, you know, a sidekick. So we figured, you know, let's make him a pararescue person, which, you know, they're like, you know, Uber guys. I mean, they're like, you know, as well-trained as special forces, but they do medical services. So they're the ones who rescue the special forces when they go down, or anyone in the, you know, in any kind of, you know, mission. So our Watson's a real badass compared to lots of other incarnations. I mean, the Sherlock version, I think he's awesome, great shot, but I feel sometimes he's the dude in distress sometimes. And it's one thing that this Watson will never be.
That's fair. That's fair. I was having this conversation with somebody else at Comic-Con recently about how, you know, he's often tied to chairs or, you know, the gun to his head. And it's not that he's not a, you know, total BAMF, but Dude in Distress, I think, is definitely BAMF. Fair to Blind Banker. Definitely fair at the
end
of the
day. Well, the fact is that BBC John Watson gets kidnapped all the goddamn time. It's just because some girl shows up with a car.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Just walks straight in.
Three continents, Watson.
So I would say our Watson's not going to be caught up in those situations as much. He's going to be a bit more streetwise, and he's going to know how to avoid getting taken out.
Nice. And he meets your Holmes in the first issue at the hospital.
Mm-hmm.
And Holmes is a little bit... I like how you don't know exactly what on earth he is in the first issue for the beginning of it. He's like, who is this guy? And he's not a cop. So your Holmes, your concept for Holmes is also, like, very much dovetails that of Watson in that he seems like he's also ready to kick ass and take names. Do you want to talk about him for a second?
Yeah. Paul, should we talk a little bit about his origin, just a little tease?
So, yes, let's see if we can figure this one out. Holmes did actually begin his career in the computer world and was part of, well, how do we put it? He lost a great deal of credit and was blacklisted from the industry that he very much loved as a programmer and as a computer scientist.
During the dot-com times.
From the dot-bomb times, yeah. And he was very young when this had happened, and roughly around the same time, his mother was murdered.
Mm-hmm.
It set things off for him in a very negative light. He did get involved a great deal in drugs, but during the time that he was trying to help the pretty much uncooperative, non-interested police figure out what happened to his mother, alongside Mike Holmes, his brother had actually had joined him in this for that time. I mean, well, Holmes discovered he had a gift with criminology and became obsessed with how much of it ended up being just thrown aside before it could ever be solved.
Mm-hmm.
And he saw that so many people in the inner city just do not get the amount of brain work or footwork done for them. And where he could have stayed in was it New York University?
John Jay,
where he met Lestrade. Leslie Stroud, where he met her. He could have continued on in a brilliant career in forensics or whatnot. He continued getting obsessed with the fact that there were so many people out there with no one taking on what they needed, taking on the care cases. And that's where his career began. He moonlights doing computer-based, problem solving from time to time, but for the most part, he lives off of donations, and he's sure as heck not getting rich from this, but he spends most of his time really just making sure that people get their problems solved in the most efficient and most meaningful way. It's not just his own curiosity, he's feeling driven to keep people from falling in the same situation that he did.
Yeah, it's really interesting to me, specifically because you know, there are great things about Elementary and odd things about Elementary, but I find that why Holmes is there is always a problem for me. Like, this is a functioning police department that's working on, he just sort of, he like appears and then has access to these files and, you know, like is working alongside the cops. And to me, what can, you know, depending on the episode, cause of course, you know, they're different episode to episode, but sometimes kind of a, you know, I'm like, what is this guy doing here? Forensics would have figured that out 5 seconds later. And what's really cool for me about the world you've set up is it really is a world where the problem isn't that the NYPD can't solve the crime. The problem is they're not bothering to solve the crime. Like, they're putting effort into it that is more of a minimal effort because, exactly as you said, because it's an inner city environment, and they are not doing all that they can, and then Holmes steps in, and you know exactly why he's there.
Right, right. And there's also something that's going to be coming up later on with one of his discussions with Stroud, is it's not that there's the force is filled with a great deal of uncaring people, it's that they are overwhelmed.
Right.
And it's one of the reasons why he continues to work with her is because he knows that there are times that he is going to need to rely on aid that only she can give, or that he can't just go around like a maverick and do these things, because he's going to need to have access to a crime scene at some point. Sometime they're going to actually have a problem that he has information on, and he's going to get it to her somehow so that she'll have access to it. He's not going to try to stand in the way of any of the police, and it's something that's going to be a problem for him because he knows there are things that he's going to have to do that could get him in trouble,
mm-hmm.
but there's going to be a point where he actually does try to rope in the police in on issues as well, just to make sure that things really do get taken care of.
I think that's a really clever way to solve that issue, like Lindsay was saying, because, I mean, in Victorian times, you're talking about Holmes having forensic methods that are, like, new, that the police aren't using, that no one's heard of. But I think anybody who's updating the story has to deal with the issue of why he's there and how he's allowed to be there and how he's doing things that the police are either not able to do or not willing to do. And I think, like Lindsay said, there are more and less successful ways to do that because you do run the risk of having the question of why is this guy here and why is he allowed to be there. So I think you guys have done a great job of giving a really good reason for that that doesn't detract from the story at all. It really adds to it.
No, I appreciate that.
Thank you, yeah.
I think, and I watch Elementary every Thursday too, because, you know, I think it's in my interest to, like, you know, see, you know, the competing Holmes shows, and I think there's some good writing here and there when they show Sherlock solving stuff and picking stuff up. I'm like, oh, that's tip hat to them when they do certain things. But the buzz is that they make Sherlock very unlikable in that series. I mean, he's a real douche sometimes, and they're really putting up emo addict thing on him.
Yeah.
You know, with the whole relationship with Watson being his minder, I feel like it's wearing itself a little thin sometimes, and, you know, I'd like to see where, if they're going to go with, like, you know, when we're going to see their version of Moriarty or, you know, things that lead up to it. It just feels like, you know, it's still a little bit of, like, CBS's procedural detective show right now.
No, yeah, sure. I mean, that's their time-tested sort of, this is what gets us ratings and what gets us an audience, and that's what we kind of go with.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't, like, I genuinely don't think that they are going out to make, like, a Sherlock Holmes story. I think they are going out to make a procedural with the names, sometimes referencing things. I mean, which is fine. It's what CBS does and what they do well. But I think, yeah. I'll be interested. Like, I haven't watched anything since the pilot. I've seen bits and pieces, mostly because I've just been gallivanting around Europe. But, right.
Gee, what a choice.
I know.
Free or gallivant around Europe.
Mm. Aren't the episodes, like, a month behind or a couple weeks behind there?
No, Sky Living, they've done it pretty quickly. It's about 2 weeks behind, that's all.
Hmm.
That's not bad.
No. Yeah, no, they're doing very well with it. And I haven't heard much hubbub about it over here. There's lots of billboards and stuff around. Like, they're pushing the advertising. I think that because they're just like, hey, look, we can do this thing too because BBC's not on. But, I mean, it's UK. It's sort of like Sherlock is like their baby. And they're like,
yeah. Yeah.
I like I said before, I think Sherlock is probably the best modern interpretation of like trying to accurately reinterpret Sherlock Holmes as is and make him fit in modern times. I think we decided, let's take elements of Sherlock Holmes and like reinterpret it, and like how would things be changed if it was in New York, if, you know, we changed their race, and how would the dynamics of his, you know, Moriarty be with Sherlock, how would all these things be different and still maintain the essence of Sherlock Holmes?
Well, I think that that's one of the best things, honestly, about your comic, is that we've had these conversations regarding CBS Elementary on multiple occasions where it's like, these are some folks who got together and they said, okay, we are going to put together a new police procedural and we're going to base it on Sherlock Holmes. But they didn't, I mean, it's admitted by at least one of the creators, Rob Doherty, that it wasn't a question of him saying, I love the Sherlock Holmes stories, I want to adapt them specifically. It was more like a project that was brought to him by his co-writer, and then, you know, they're writing, obviously you have to write in a certain sense for the network. You don't want your show to get, you want your show to get picked up, first of all, then you don't want it to get canceled. So you have to, yeah, to a certain extent, write for the audience of the network. But it really reads to me like, when I pick up Watson and Holmes, made by people who wanted to, who were fans of the original material and wanted to reinterpret it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, how did you guys arrive at the subject material? How did you get to updating Holmes and Watson specifically?
Well, we were talking about different stories that would just, you know, what would their modern day analogies be like? It was, you know, New Year's. We were just hanging out, and it was just different versions of older tales. Characters that would, if I remember correctly, that's, what else did we talk about at that time, Brandon? There was some other people that, people, classic characters from stories that we were wondering how well they would translate, and this one kept popping up.
Yeah. And the next day, you know, when, you know, I was really thinking about stuff, I was like coming up with some ideas, and I was talking to Paul, like, you know, hey, you know, how would this work if you're doing this and that? And then eventually, you know, Paul was talking about like adapting, you know, one of the classic Sherlock stories, you know, like, there's, you know, the first arc of the Watson and Holmes is definitely inspired by a Sherlock story. Paul, do you want to say which one that we have some loose inspiration by?
Good Lord, I could if I actually did not have my brain just collapse. Was it Study in Scarlet?
I would say some of Study in Scarlet is...
Was that it? Yeah, that was the one with... What was the one with... the Mormon Church was involved.
Yeah,
Good
Study
Lord.
In Scarlet.
That was, yeah, Study in Scarlet.
Yeah, Study in Scarlet.
Yeah.
That's definitely, you know, one of the main stories we looked at to, like, you know, craft this one. But however, this is also, of course, you know, Watson and Holmes' origin, how they meet each other. So it's a little bit different than how other people approach it. Yeah, I mean, we're getting right into the action and, you know, we're leading, you know, into the whole Moriarty situation, you know. It's you know.
Yeah, we've been dropping clues the entire time, so.
Yeah, they're there.
And yeah.
They're even in the second issue, they're all over the place. You just have to look and you'll really get an idea of, like, how different our Moriarty is than previous incarnations.
He's not really going to be even introduced for a while yet. There's just going to be a build-up.
His presence will be known by the last issue. And his presence is felt throughout the first two issues as well.
So how many issues is the first arc, Ben?
Four issues.
Four. Okay, cool. And then are you planning on collecting those together?
Yes.
Yeah.
Killer.
Very nice. It'll be quite nice. We're even going to go through and I'm going to touch up the colors and get everything kind of unified, because there are some differences as we've been going through it. Mm-hmm. There are so many times that we've just said, well, how would this look looking like this? Well, what if it looked like this? And so it's been kind of interesting. We've been learning what we really like in the process of actually doing this. So figuring out the feeling and the look overall. I mean, there are so many other stories that we want to tell, and there are some stories that are original that we could even come up with too, but there's so much that can be done. And, you know, like, Brandon had mentioned at the convention, it's like we'd like to involve some view folk in some of the stories as well.
Yeah. I mean, it was, it's really obvious to anybody who chats with you that you're, you know, big fans of the original material and the design of it. I've been super impressed. And, you know, we've been chatting back and forth a little bit about how important it is to come up with a really specific visual reference point for the people as you're writing them. And everybody looks great. I mean, Mrs. Hudson, God.
Isn't she awesome?
Yeah.
She's the best. Does she own the record shop downstairs?
Yes, yeah.
Yeah.
And if she's not down there drinking a cup of coffee and putting on other records, she's usually upstairs checking on, seeing if Holmes is okay. So.
Mm-hmm. So in terms of, you've got Holmes and Watson, obviously, and then you've got Mike Holmes.
Yep.
And mm-hmm. then Leslie Straub.
Mm-hmm.
Leslie Stroud, yeah.
Yeah, Stroud, excuse me. Leslie Stroud. And Leslie Stroud, I can't wait to see more of Leslie Stroud, because that is a killer gender bending and absolutely awesome. And then you were saying that you have a lot of other stories that you were thinking, hey, yeah, that'd be sexy to adapt that one. I mean, do you have any teasers about ones that are in the back of your noggin?
I think definitely we'd like to redo Hounds of the Baskervilles.
Right. That one's going to take a lot of thinking, and we'll be talking
That'll
a great deal
tricky.
With Carl about that. Yeah. There were a couple of original stories. One of them was we were discussing the concept of taking some actual mysteries of the Victorian era and kind of transplanting them to the modern day. I mean, for instance, a sort of modern Typhoid Mary sort of character would
cool.
be kind of frightening. And we've got a spring-heeled Jack who is a parkour expert and
Hell yes.
Thrill killer. Who's going around New York. And there's, you know, some other strange things that we have. But one of the things that we're most interested in is building up the ability to do an anthology, like, every God knows how many months. Just, you know, first of all, it would appear digitally, but then something that would be easily collectible, where we do short maybe one-issue, two-issue stories with different artists and writer teams.
Mm-hmm.
Different people. There's so many artists out there that could do great interpretations of all this, and there's just as many writers who'd be terrific as well. And so it'll be really neat to see what we can come up with down the line.
So when you guys did the writing for it, did you come up with the concept for the story, and then Carl wrote the first one based on?
We actually had gone through a couple of different people until we found the right writer, but Carl's been an absolutely excellent fit so far. Really, not just into the whole Sherlock Holmes mythology, but mm-hmm. a really good mystery writer, really solid writer, and great with dialogue. So we're extremely lucky with this.
Yeah, and I think he definitely, you know, he could definitely relate to Watson and Holmes, you know, especially from his, you know, own life. He could definitely empathize with Watson. You know,
there is that.
You know, he just really has, you know, and he knows the area. I mean, he lives up way uptown as well, so
I could probably wave at him from here.
Probably
more than likely.
Yeah, that's great, and it takes a minute to come up with the exact right fit, of course, for the tone that you guys are looking for.
It doesn't. It took some tries. You know, there are some people who are suited to different styles of writing, and there aren't as many people that write mystery or crime sort of stuff as you would think. So,
mm-hmm. What have you found to be the biggest challenge then in terms of getting Watson and Holmes launched and out there? Was it to do with just getting the initial team together, or have you had other obstacles afterward? Or,
I mean, we definitely have obstacles of getting things done and story changes in the middle of, you know, like, you know, little things in the story changing in production. You know, we would work with Rick, and he would point something out, and then we'd have to change something. I think that's, you know, your typical production issues. I think the biggest thing, though, is just getting press for this. It's like, you know, I'm really glad that the Sherlock groups and Tumblrs have really taken an interest in the project.
It's
kind of tough with, like, the major comic book press to put stuff out there, you know, even though Rick Leonardi's a known, you know, artist, and Carl Ballers actually is very well known for his Sonic the Hedgehog run. I mean, he's actually, you know, very popular with a whole generation of kids.
Sure.
So it's exactly. I call them, you know, the Men in Tights Mafia, you know, of text. It's like, you know, if you're not doing a superhero book, it's sort of like for the, like, DC or Marvel or, you know, a spoof of one of those characters, it's like it's much harder to get publicity. It's like we're not, you know, we're not doing, you know, another Batman-style story or, you know, oh,
right.
Heroes kill each other type of story. It's like, you know, what if? It's like, no, we're trying to, you know, really do a newer spin on Sherlock Holmes that's never been attempted before. And again,
one with him in tight.
Yeah, yeah.
I don't know about that.
Yeah. But it's just really interesting that, you know, even, you know, the mainstream press is hard to reach about this because, you know, you would think, the urban and hip hop magazines might be interested in this, but, you know, we haven't heard anything from them yet. So it's just, I think that's the hardest part is just, you know, breaking through to the media.
Yeah.
I'm thinking, you know, of seeing how I can get, you know, the book across into Europe. I'm already working on a French translation.
Oh, good.
And the French comic market's huge, and I mean, it's a lot bigger than the United States, and superheroes are not the thing in France. It's really, you know, they're more into drama, crime, you know, science fiction and fantasy. So I think there might be, you know, a really good market for Watson and Holmes over there, especially if I can, you know, have a French version ready to go.
Well, hey, Watson and Holmes would not be the first thing exported from Harlem to France in order to make money. I mean,
that's very, very true.
If you're looking at it culturally, you've got a long, distinguished line.
Yep.
Harlem projects exported to Paris and then paid for their work. So, yeah, not too shabby an idea.
Christina, what's your thoughts on Germany for like Watson Home? Do you think there's a market for that? Because I don't know what the comic market is in like in Germany. I mean, really, France and Belgium are like known as the big European markets for comics.
Yeah, like I think definitely in Europe, it's definitely France and Belgium hardcore. I've seen a few comic shops around here. Yeah, I don't know. I wish I could give you a better answer than that. I think definitely
right.
Shoot for France and Belgium hardcore because I remember when I was in Paris for a little bit and you went to the bookstore and they had an entire floor dedicated to just comic books.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
It was insane. I was like, holy bejesus muffins. And I went through.
I think I'll start using that for the daily life. Thank you.
Please, yes.
Refuel to steal it. Yeah, I just went through, and like there were tons of like various Sherlock Holmes books that they had. It was mostly they were all Victorian, so I think this would definitely be something that they'd be very interested in. Not only because it's a modern adaptation, but it's something very different with the whole Harlem and everything.
I think you should be thinking Japan too. What do you think, Chris?
Absolutely. Oh God, yes, that I can
Korea.
Definitely vouch for.
Absolutely. Those two.
Oh, we've already got somebody working on a Korean translation pretty soon. So,
excellent.
It's just the thing is, you know, finding the distribution outlet.
Yeah.
In Japan, I mean.
Is it easier with ebooks? Like, can you manage to distribute it in a slightly like if you were to do an e-comic for say the iPad in Japan?
No.
I can. Or whatever equivalent.
I can tell you that because I lived in Japan for a year, Brenda.
Right.
And it's always, like, printed. Like, because the things in Japan, like, sometimes you can get single issues, but usually they come in, like, this giant, like, compilation or sort of like an anthology in a way. It comes out, like, once a month. So it's, like, a few pages every single week. Like, the Sherlock manga is being distributed that way. It's like a new chapter every month. So it's really getting a distribution in one of those big anthology things, like Young Ace and that sort of thing.
Right.
Yeah, they have their own like comic book mafia in Japan, from what I've heard. I was talking to someone else, and it's, you know, again, I don't know what the digital distribution is like over there. Again, I don't know how big they are. And I know, again, like Comics Plus, where we're using, I think they may have... You know, releases in Japan, you know, for Japanese. I know Comixology does. We're still trying to get in with them. But I don't know who, like, is the big, you know, digital comics distributor over there, or the marketplace to use them. I mean, I don't know what kind of traction Apple has, you know, or Android has in Japan for that kind of market. Like, I know people do watch videos and trains and buses there, and I think they even, you know, read digital manga too, but again, that's probably been the biggest obstacles to finding out where to go with that.
Well, and it's interesting because it's a project that on the one hand is extraordinarily specific, and on the other hand is just really just easy to read for anyone who wanted to pick it up and get into it immediately because it's iconic. It's like, it's iconic Sherlock Holmes and Dr. Watson. You know exactly where you are with these guys pretty much the minute you start reading the comic book. So anybody who likes Sherlock Holmes adaptations would be interested in this.
Oh, absolutely.
Nice.
So I have a kind of a wrap question for me, which is, I do a lot of reviews for the site of, like, prestige and stuff, and I'm always kind of looking for a way to sum up each book, like, what is it about this book that, if you're into Sherlock Holmes, what's the distinguishing thing about this adaptation that is why you should get it? And you guys have talked a lot about specifics and plot and everything, but if you were going to, like, sum up kind of that, like, pitch way to say, for people who are listening to this who love Sherlock Holmes, what is it about your adaptation that makes it something that they should check out?
That's a good question.
This is a little bit hard question. I think for me, if you ever wanted to, like, you know, see a more modern, badass Sherlock and Watson, you know, like, really how far you could push it, I think that's where our stories, I think everything that you preconceived of Sherlock Holmes and the canon, just imagine things are going to be pushed a lot more than they probably previously had. Like,
nice.
A real, like when we say in the credits page, a fresh take on a Victorian classic, it really is. It really is, you know, we are, like, really pushing the boundaries of, you know, how things work, how the characters relate to each other. I mean, we solve a lot of problems of motivations and, you know, between. Mm-hmm. So I think, you know, there's never been, you know, a real good reason, you know, with Sherlock and Moriarty butting heads, and we figured out the problems. We've solved a lot of that.
That's nice.
Yeah. That's all I'm going to say.
We look forward to it.
You know, I think also there was someone who was bringing up, it was a sort of scholarly post I saw on Tumblr when I was scrolling for the BSBQ, probably a month or two ago. And it was somebody mentioning that they're really looking forward to seeing how the Baker Street Irregulars were going to be used as an entity in Elementary because they hadn't come up yet. And they were talking about the paradigm of Holmes as sort of, you know, Holmes is the rich white guy and the Baker Street Irregulars are sort of the representation of the other side of that city, of the people who, you know, whether or not some of them have homes, who knows? Maybe some do, and if they do, they're almost sure to be total hellholes. So I think it's also really interesting that just when you do the race bent thing, it completely changes the initial paradigm of Holmes being eccentric, sort of entitled.
Mm-hmm.
To a certain extent. Mm-hmm. And that's not something that I've seen done effectively all that often, just throwing it out
there. We just couldn't do that in this story. It just wouldn't have worked. I mean, Holmes is very much on the street level at this point, and actually in this version of the story. He's very connected and very invested emotionally in the people around him. And to him, the irregulars are more than just, you know, an information source for him. He really honestly trusts in them and their abilities and feels safer because of them.
Yeah.
And does what he can to try to, you know, make their lives better in the process. And that's going to come out more and more with the dialogue and later issues. We've been kind of compiling things that we know that we want in the stories at different points, but not everything's fitting into this first story arc. So,
yeah.
Got a lot to tell. But we're not having to work hard to make the irregulars fit into the storyline. That's really something that's kind of popped out, you know,
very
as we've been doing this. They make a lot more sense as far as we're concerned.
Right. Yeah, and you guys obviously have only a finite number of pages to work with. The comic is a very, like, stringent medium when it comes to how long you have and what kind of time you have to tell your story. But it's cool to see a Holmes who completely works and a Holmes that has something there's an aspect of this which is more like Sherlock Holmes, the way I think of him, than a lot of other adaptations I've seen. And at the same time, like, it's stylistically so different and obviously racially different and the setting is different, but you've done a great job at maintaining that. I mean, when I imagine Holmes and the Baker Street Irregulars, yeah, he's an entitled guy and he's got a very, very, very posh accent, but he, in my head, he cares about them and what happens to them. And I think that if one just stopped showing up at his doorstep, he would try to figure out why that was and go after him, you know.
And you have just hit on a note on one of the plots that we've been working on slightly somewhere.
Ooh, yay.
Score.
It's just really interesting how it changes a lot of the dynamics and then doesn't change any of the important ones whatsoever. Which,
yeah.
Love. Yeah, it's great.
Yeah, and I think the Bates talk about that a lot, the concept of the sort of superficial things versus preserving the spirit of something almost being more important. If you have the sort of heart of everything in the right place, you can change a lot of setting and time period and everything. But the important thing is that truth to who the characters are and to really the heart of what it's about.
Good point.
Yeah.
Did you guys have anything you wanted to let us know about as far as events that you have coming up?
I guess I, you know, since I'm in the city, you know, not too far, I know that in January, you guys, when is the Sherlock Holmes events?
The events of the BSI weekend. So the January events, I guess we could do this as a plug for people, you know, everywhere, if you guys want to.
Sure.
Why not? Yeah. So the BSI weekend is going to be taking place starting on Wednesday, the 9th of January, and it is going to go through Sunday, the 13th of January this year. And if you were to hop on the Googles, I don't know the exact URL at the moment, but if you were to Google the Baker Street Journal and you went to the Baker Street Journal's website, they have a complete listing of all the events that are happening during the BSI.
It's actually bsiweekend.com.
Awesome. So I could have remembered that. BSIweekend.com. Yeah. And the cool thing about the BSI weekend is that yes, it is the birthday weekend and or the BSI weekend, but there is only one event out of, I'm gonna say 10 that is invitation only. And the rest of it, anyone can either buy a ticket or they can show up at the door and order a cocktail and hang out. And all of those events are listed on the BSIweekend.com webpage. So it would be well worth checking out, and the babes, I think, are going to be strongly in evidence there. It starts on Wednesday with the Adventuresses of Sherlock Holmes kicking off our annual dinner, and then it just sort of craziness escalates from there. But there's a lot of events to attend and all kinds of things that reflect different interests and different price ranges, and you can make a virtual little smorgasbord of Sherlock Holmes jewelry to suit your own interests, and that is going on very soon.
Well, definitely, nice. I know that you're going to have some things to auction off for, I think, the gala?
We are hosting for the first time this year the Daintiest Thing Under a Bonnet charity ball to benefit Wounded Warrior Project. And
nice.
We are collecting things, yes, to auction off at that event. Unfortunately, that event is presently sold out.
That's okay.
But I hope that we might have something from drumroll Watson and Holmes.
I definitely have a few copies of the Noir edition left, and we might have some issue 2 prints available. So,
oh, nice.
Yeah.
Yay!
By the way, thank you for sending along something with Crystal for Sherlapalooza. The guy who won it, Bob Ellis, actually is one of the big leagues in the Sherlock Holmes Society of London. He won it in the raffle. He was very excited.
did they have to pay for a raffle, or was it just like a raffle ticket?
Everyone got one free raffle ticket, and then you could buy extras.
Got it.
Sold like 1,700 tickets on that day. It was stupid. Ridiculous.
That's nuts.
Awesome.
So thank you for sending that along. It's very much so appreciated.
And thank you for offering to be featured at the ball as well, because that's wonderful. Absolutely fantastic.
No, that'd be great. Anything to help out the cause.
Yay!
Very nice.
All of the proceeds for the charity ball are going to go to Wounded Warrior Project. You know, in honor of not only the people who are serving overseas now and here and in this time period, but, you know, just shout out to Dr. John Watson. And not everybody gets to just meet Sherlock Holmes when they get home.
Mm-hmm.
So they need a little more help if they don't get to run into Sherlock Holmes on a sunny day at Bart's. About it. The John Watsons of the world need a cause.
They do.
Absolutely.
Yeah, that's January is going to be ridiculous.
Yeah.
Sounds like you guys have got a lot going on.
Oh,
yeah.
It never stops. But.
Well, and you're coming after Shillapalooza, which went amazing, but it's like, you've got both of them, you've got it all kind of piggybacking.
Which is part of the reason I'm going away now for 2 weeks. I will be not in contact with people and just being like, I need to go run away. I love you all, but I need to be alone.
Yes. Do not speak to me for a time. So are you guys going to do a meeting tonight then, or did we take up all your time? I'm sorry.
No, so far we haven't heard back from everyone else, so it looks like we'll have a meeting some other time. But usually we have them on Tuesdays, but, you know, we were discussing stuff, you know, the day before, and hopefully, you know, things will just go on as going on.
Well, it was great to be able to talk to you guys. Thank you so much.
It's been terrific to be here.
Thank you. And where can people find out about you if they want to buy the comic or just read up on you?
Right now, first step they can go is newparadigmstudios.com. We have news and, you know, we have links to Comics Plus, which will give you the link to buy the book. We will also eventually in the near future, probably starting early next year, we will be offering free web comics. So we have two series in development for web. You could check us out on Facebook at facebook.com/WatsonandHolmes. So I always put some, you know, little things here and there. We show some previews on Facebook a lot. Also, we have New Paradigm Studios on Facebook. And, yeah, that's probably the two best places to check us out. We also, you know, have Twitter, MP Studios, and B Perlo MPS, which is my own account, where I give, you know, some news on Twitter.
Awesome.
Sweet.
Great.
Yeah, and it's MP Studios, not MP Studio, how I first tweeted you, which is actually some sort of Mexican TV channel or something.
Very good.
Well, that's not useful.
Awesome. So you made new friends, Chris.
I did. I was kind of like, oh, this is who I meant to be talking to.
Oh, well.
That's killer.
Actually, and also eventually, you guys, if you want to hear, you know, we did an interview last week with Rick on Comics Are Great. I think they have a link to Yahoo for the whole uncut episode, but they are editing that episode for their own site.
Oh, great.
Sweet.
You really get a lot from Rick on that one, so it's very Rick-centric. And, you know, plus the guy who runs the site really loves Rick as well, so it definitely... You'll get that side of the story a lot.
Awesome. Yeah, that'll be fun to check out.
We'll do a cross-post, cross-linking thing.
Right?
Oh, it's 2:15 in the morning. I'm so tired.
Well, thank you, guys. It was a pleasure to chat with you, and we will, of course, let you know as soon as the episode is edited and wandering around the interwebs.
Awesome.
Best of luck with your second issue.
Yes.
Thank you. Thank you.
Yes, and all your future Watson and Holmes endeavors.
Absolutely, thank you. Yeah, we'll eventually have more news on that stuff, too.
Awesome.
Yay.
Cool. Well, nice. Have a fun rest of your night, guys.
You too.
Cheers. Okay, well, you guys take care. Bye-bye.
You too. Bye-bye.
Good night. Thank you.
If this quotidian world has got you crying, won't you two to one?